You are listening to The State of Sustainability, a podcast that highlights sustainability initiatives throughout the state and develops a casual conversation about environmental stewardship that the average person can understand and replicate. I'm your host, Caleb Powell.
And I'm your co-host, Ashley Cabrera.
So, today I would like to introduce our guest, Rhett Dunlap. He is a good friend of mine. I've known Rhett for a long time. And it just so happened that our career paths sort of overlap, if you will, when it comes to the sustainable aspect of his job. So I was like, "Hey, Rhett, you know, let's talk about your company and what you guys got going on." So instead of reading a bio, I wanted to just jump into sort of your background, how you got to where you are. Currently, and then we'll jump into the actual technology of CarbonCure.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Caleb. And first of all, thank you and Ashley both for the opportunity to be a part of the State of Sustainability podcast. I'm really excited, being from Tennessee myself, growing up in Knoxville, really just excited to just tell the industry about a new innovative technology that they might not know about. So yeah, again, just thank you. And so a little bit more on my background. I grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee, went to Middle Tennessee State University, where that's where Caleb and I ran into each other. There I studied concrete industry management, and from there moved on to the ready-mix concrete industry, getting experience in St. Louis for about 5 years. And it was there that I met and developed a relationship with CarbonCure Technologies, my current employer. So yeah, there it was. That's where I built my industry background, and now just really excited to be working with such an innovative tech around low carbon concrete. So really exciting.
Awesome. Well, yeah, it's great to have you. And I want to start off, you know, very broad question, but since I have no clue what it is either, I want our listeners to learn about this really cool technology. So what is CarbonCure?
Yeah, so CarbonCure is a carbon removal technology company that offers a suite of technologies to the global concrete industry. And we offer both hardware and software solutions for them to help reduce the carbon footprint of their concrete and also lower the environmental impact of their concrete that's out in the marketplace.
That's pretty cool. So, and after looking into, you know, your website, and you guys have sort of like a, I call it the elevator pitch video that sort of talks about the technology. But if somebody hasn't seen that, I wanted to talk a little bit about what exactly or how exactly carbon, CO2, is embedded into concrete. How does that work?
Yeah, so again, we offer a suite of technologies, so both hardware and software solutions for everywhere from the ready-mix concrete industry to the precast concrete industry. We even have a recycled water technology, which is now commercialized, but our probably the most well-known technology that we use most often out in the marketplace today is our ready-mix technology. And so the way that CarbonCure works, especially for our ready-mix application, is we inject a precise dose of carbon dioxide at the point of batching. And what that does is, once injected, the CO2 immediately mineralizes within the concrete, and it becomes nano calcium carbonate particles, which is actually the same chemical makeup as limestone, which is already in concrete as a normal ingredient most of the time. And so we're really adding in CO2 that's being trapped inside of the concrete. And what it does is it allows you to achieve the same quality concrete with a lower carbon footprint and to use less cement to achieve the same quality concrete.
So this might be a dumb question, but is there any way for it to ever escape? I know you're talking about, you know, it actually changing the makeup of it, but is there any, you know, instance where that CO2 could escape, you know, if the concrete gets broken up or anything like that? I know that might sound sort of weird, but it's something that just sort of came to my mind.
No, totally. It's not a weird question at all. I think it's something that we get asked a lot. And so, no, once that CO2 undergoes that chemical reaction, it's actually completely changed. It's no longer CO2. It's now calcium carbonate, which, again, you can think of, it's the same chemical makeup as a limestone particle. And so once it's in there, it's actually trapped forever. So once that, let's say, you know, 50 years from now, that 100 years from now, that concrete building is, you know, demolished, that CO2 is now being re-released back into the atmosphere.
That's really neat. You know, it's just got the wheels in my brain turning. And it just makes me think, like, it makes so much sense. Why can't we just do that with all the carbon instead of, you know, putting it out into the atmosphere? Why can't we just turn it into essentially like limestone? And I guess that's essentially what you guys are trying to do. So, but yeah, I just don't understand why we're not, this isn't more broadly done. Cause it just makes, from what you just explained, it just makes so much sense.
Yeah. And you know, we are rapidly growing right now to where there's being more and more, design community involvement in, you know, specifying CarbonCure or looking into getting CarbonCure onto their projects. And more we're getting into more new markets. But yeah, we are a rapidly growing company. So that's some good news. You know, it's not like people just aren't doing this. So that's really exciting. But even locally, you know, we do have producers in Tennessee using the product and buildings that are being built with CarbonCure concrete in the state of Tennessee. But yeah, it's really neat, and even from a government level, you know, the federal government has recently passed an executive order, the administration, to require EPDs on federal projects, and an EPD is an environmental product declaration. You can think of it as essentially a nutrition label for your building materials. So it'll have your global warming potential, your initial energy required to, you know, manufacture the building material, all of those things. And so we're seeing that those sorts of policy decisions being made not only on a federal level, but there are several states that have introduced legislation around environment, low carbon concrete and EPDs, and even on a municipal level. So I was up in the city of Madison, Wisconsin, and the city there had, you know, started a pilot project to look at using CarbonCure on their municipal concrete, such as sidewalks or, you know, stuff that us citizens use every day in a city. So really exciting stuff there, and that's been a great project for us to work on already.
Who are the main or like frequent users of the CarbonCure technology?
Yeah, thanks, Ashley. So again, so the technologies that we offer are for the concrete industry. So they are our customers, but the end users of CarbonCure concrete are going to be really anyone that can use concrete. So we've been poured in many applications, from cold Canadian winters to hot Hawaiian summers. Really, there's no application of concrete that we're not able to be used in. And so locally in Tennessee, the producer that we work with is Irving Materials, IMI. And so they have a very strong foothold around Middle Tennessee, a large presence, and are building lots of different, or supplying concrete to lots of different building projects around the Middle Tennessee area. Some notable end users there locally in terms of owners and buildings. Yeah, the Amazon Logistics headquarters, which is on Church Street down there in Nashville, that project used CarbonCure concrete, as well as GM's new electric vehicle manufacturing facility in Spring Hill, Tennessee. It's also using CarbonCure, being supplied by IMI. So there's those two, along with, you know, several other projects around the state of Tennessee that are actually receiving CarbonCure concrete today, but, you know, really working with the design community, engineers and architects and owners around Tennessee to just learn about CarbonCure and start to ask for it on their projects is really a goal of mine, to to get it out there into the market more and more, but it is being used around our state, so that's exciting.
Yeah, definitely. And so would you say that, you know, the concrete technology that Carbon Cure is using, is that something that's just like, you know, blowing up right now in the Southeast, or is it, I mean, or is the whole United States, are you guys in different countries? Like, how well and how much is this being received in different parts of the U.S. or, you know, even the world?
Yeah. So right now we've got over 550 systems sold across 25 different countries. We've delivered 2.4 million truckloads of Carbon Cure concrete already, which has resulted in 160,000 metric tons of CO2 being saved. And that's equivalent to taking 34,475 cars off the road every year. So that's just a little bit more about the scope of kind of where Carbon Cure's at today. But our mission is to achieve 500 million metric tons of CO2 reduction annually. And that's equivalent to taking 100 million cars off the road every single year. So we've still got a long way to go to achieve our goal. And so, you know, getting more knowledge and awareness of this opportunity to supply low carbon concrete to building projects, especially in Tennessee and really anywhere, you know, any state and or country, is just a huge part of, you know, what I like to do personally, is just to really spread that awareness to let people know this is an option out there.
Yeah, Rhett, this is really interesting to me. And so as you were talking about it, and we're talking about, you know, the local projects, you talked about General Motors, and that's a huge project. I mean, I don't even know what the square footage of their battery plant that they're making, but I went by there the other day, and it's just a massive project. And I forget the other project that you were talking about, but it's Amazon headquarters. I mean, it's a huge building. So these are big, massive projects using a lot of concrete that we've talked about. And my wife and I, we actually just got done building our house. And of course, when you build anything, essentially you're going to need concrete. So we're on a slab foundation. So we had probably like 4 or 5 truckloads of concrete come in. Now, is there any, like, say I wanted to use this, your technology, if I build another house or do any type of addition, is there, I don't know how to say this, is there too small? Would that be too small to use your technology, or how would I go about, like, you know, requesting that or making that happen?
For sure. Yeah. Great question. And so to answer it, straightly, no, there's no project, too small to use Carbon Cure concrete. So, you know, we've been using many, many residential homes all across, this country and others. It's actually a huge part of what a lot of our ready mix customers supply is, you know, residential concrete. So it's very often that, you know, we've been used in residential applications. And so the best way to, you know, find out if you can use this locally on your project would be to get in touch with your concrete supplier. So, you know, here in Tennessee, that would be IMI Irving Materials. But, you know, wherever you live, wherever you're listening to this podcast, you know, contact your local ready mix concrete supplier, ask them if they have Carbon Cure available, and just if they don't, let them know that you're interested in it. And what that will do is, you know, drive more awareness to the producers that there's being a market demand for the product. And
yeah, it's a great point. Like, just the technology, that it makes so much sense. So yeah, I guess as a consumer, you have to sort of use your money to change how things are. So if this technology is going to be sort of incorporated into, like, going forward, all types of concrete, which would be great because it would be, you know, encapsulating a lot of that carbon instead of it going into the atmosphere, you got to sort of ask, get that conversation going, you know, and like you said, people want to be sustainable. People want to be doing the right thing. And if it's, you know, as easy as, hey, we'd like to use this type of technology, you know, I think that it's the way to sort of change a mindset, you know. So really exciting. I'm glad that we were able to link up and talk about this, and I'm hoping that everyone, you know, now knows that listens now knows that technology is out there, and that, you know, for me, not only does it make me feel good that there's something like that out there, but also it just makes me excited. You know, what other new ideas are going to be coming out? What other new types of technology are there to capture CO2 or to you know, just be all around more sustainable? So love listening to new technology like this. Glad we get you on the podcast, and appreciate all that you do.
Yeah, Caleb and Ashley, I appreciate the opportunity to be on here, and definitely encourage. There's tons of new technologies in the carbon removal space, and we're just glad to be a part of that and encourage everyone to try to use lower embodied carbon building materials. You know, really, we want to be the sixth ingredient in concrete. You know, there's five ingredients in concrete. We want to be the global standard of concrete. So really appreciate the time, and thank you all so much. And yeah, look forward to talking to you again soon.
The Ranger Report, brought to you by the Tennessee State Parks. Fun and adventure, naturally. All right, the Ranger Report is back. We are super excited to be here with Travis Stover, the park manager at Pickett CCC Memorial State Park. And we will get into a little bit later why or what that CCC Memorial portion of the state park's name means. So, Travis, thank you so much for joining us today. Excited to have you. It's always nice getting to talk to the park manager. Love getting to talk to the park rangers as well, but always a pleasure getting to talk to the managers of the park. So what I wanted to do, we already talked about who you are. I just wanted to sort of talk about how you got into this position at Pickett State Park.
Sure. First and foremost, thank you for reaching out and having us, giving us the opportunity to speak today. And we really appreciate that. And always look forward to a chance to highlight our park. But I've been the park manager at Pickett State Park since May of 2017, so right at 5 years. Prior to that, I served as the park manager at the Sergeant Alvin C. York State Historic Park, and also spent some time as a park ranger at Standing Stone and Nathan Bedford Forest State Parks as well.
Awesome. Yeah, and it's every time that I talk to a ranger and sort of ask how they got to where they are, it's really awesome seeing the journey through the different state parks to where they end up. So clearly you know the state park system pretty well, and we're just excited to have you on here.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And, you know, I didn't even delve into, you know, the time I spent as a seasonal at Edgar Evans and Fall Creek Falls. So kind of been in a lot of different places and a lot of unique parks, and just it's been good to be able to, you know, see all the different things that state parks offers out there.
Yeah, and you know, I feel like that a lot of the careers in state parks start, you know, as a seasonal, and you know, and then starting to learn the parks and the whole system as a whole, and then, you know, moving your way up. So, pretty exciting. And you know, any of our listeners out there that are always tune in for the Ranger Reports, you know, that's what I've always found just doing these interviews is, you know, if that's something that you might want to do, reach out. Look into some of those seasonal positions. That's normally how I see the Rangers starting out. So,
yeah, absolutely. That was the springboard for me becoming a park ranger. Prior to taking a seasonal job, I didn't know that I actually wanted to be a park ranger. And that first season working at Edgar Evans and getting to experience, you know, educating visitors and especially children on, you know, the natural world and animals and things like that. It was just a very rewarding experience. And, you know, it was kind of, it hooked me from that point forward. And I'm like, this is, I think, what I really want to do. And that was what launched me into pursuing becoming a park ranger, was those initial experiences as a seasonal ranger at Edgar Evans and Fall Creek Falls State Parks.
Yeah, both very beautiful state parks. So easy to see how it sort of captivated you and made you want to stick around. So I wanted to talk a little bit, you know, I mentioned that the park's long name, you know, or like given name is Pickett CCC Memorial State Park. So when we start to talk about the history of this, of the park, can you talk about, you know, what that means, that CCC Memorial, and then, you know, like how that sort of ties into the history of the park.
Sure. Of course, Pickett was set aside initially. The area that is referred to as Pickett was set aside initially whenever the Stearns Coal and Lumber Company donated the land to the state, and with the intention that it would become, I guess, a forest recreational area. And the development of the park started in 1934 under the guidance of the National Park Service and the Civilian Conservation Corps as part of those New Deal programs that was happening in the 1930s during the Depression era. And the reason that Pickett ultimately received the name CCC Memorial State Park was because of all the beautiful and unique Civilian Conservation Corps structures that were built here that are still here at the park today and are well-preserved and in good shape that people can come and see. So Pickett was selected to become that memorial park because it has such a great representation of the Civilian Conservation Corps architecture and craftsmanship and stuff that you can come see today.
Yeah, definitely. I've had the great opportunity to come and check out a lot of, the architecture and the buildings that have been preserved very well. And so very exciting. If you haven't made it out there, definitely something to do. So I wanted to also talk about, you already talked about what it was before. And what year did Pickett become an actual state park?
The dedication for Pickett State Park, it was actually in May of 1941. So I guess we consider our birthday, so to speak, as 1941, and that's the year that you would see on the sign when you enter into the park.
Awesome. And so now I want to jump into a little bit of like park information. We've talked about the history and a lot of the cool things to see there. Definitely the CCC Memorial aspect of it. But I wanted to talk about like location of the park. If somebody's never even heard of Pickett and you're looking at a map of Tennessee, can you sort of give us a good explanation of where, where you guys lay in the land?
Sure, we are, the park itself is about 1,000 acres and we're located kind of about 12 miles north of Jamestown, Tennessee. We're situated on the kind of the northern part of the Cumberland Plateau in the state of Tennessee. We're kind of situated amongst a lot of public lands. We're adjacent to the Big South Fork National River Recreation Area, and the park itself is, located within 20-some-odd thousand acres of Pickett State Forest.
Oh, wow, I didn't realize that. And so, you said 1,000 acres, is that correct?
The park itself is roughly 1,000 acres in size, but we're surrounded by tons of state forest land, and then adjacent to the, I think it's 127,000 acres that the Big South Fork National Park Service land has as well.
So I usually ask the question that follows this, like, what would you say is your park size in comparison to the others? I always say there's small, medium, and large parks. That's sort of hard for you because of course 1,000 acres that is actually the state park is a lot of acreage and a pretty big park. But, when you've got all of that other, sort of protected lands around it, it sort of makes the state park feel a lot bigger. So I don't know if that question is very adequate for, your location. But, in comparison with just that 1,000 acres, I guess, and with what you guys offer, how would you say your park is categorized, like a small, medium, or large compared to the others?
If you're put the pressure on me, which sounds like you are, I would say probably a medium-sized park. It'll feel much larger just because you have so much wild lands around you. And then, our next-door neighbor, I didn't even mention, is Poe Creek State Natural Area, and that's about 3,000 acres in size. So, but as far as the park and its amenities that it offers, it's larger than a day-use park with cabins and camping and miles and miles of trails. It can feel like a large park, but as far as, classifying it, next to, say, Natchez Trace or Fall Creek Falls, we would be more on the medium-sized, very similar to a Standing Stone State Park, probably like a Chickasaw, some of those more, traditional rustic-type parks is what people might be thinking of. We would be in that same category.
Yeah, that's definitely what I was thinking, but then, you go back to what I was saying earlier is, like, having so much protected land and other, you know, natural areas and state forests around, it truly does make it feel like endless amounts of nature around you. So you brought up a good point, talking about activities offered. You know, you guys aren't a day use park, so meaning do you have a campground you mentioned hiking, so I'm assuming there's you know, backpacking or backcountry hike or camping, and then do you guys have a campsite as well?
So the park itself, we have, you know, just traditional campground, as well as cabins and a group camp. There is one trail that people will hike and utilize for backcountry campsite type hiking. That one's an interesting one because we actually have a shared trail with Pickett State Forest. So the trail begins and ends on Pickett State Park, but it ventures onto the state forest and the area where people traditionally set up for their, you know, overnight backpacking on the Hidden Passage Trail is technically on the state forest. And that trail, depending on who you talk to, I guess, and how tired they are, but it's about 8 miles. Some people will tell you it's 10, but they may be, you know, adding some of the, you know, little offshoots on some of the spur trails. But it's about 8 miles total, and it's a pretty good challenging trail.
Sweet, yeah. My friends and I, we enjoy backpacking, so that's one that I haven't done yet. So maybe I could, me and the wife can go out there, and now that it's, well, it's really hot this week, but maybe it starts to cool down a little bit. We can find a good weekend. We can head on out there and check it out. So other than that, you know, you talked about the CCC Memorial aspect of it. Do you guys do any sort of like guided tours or education with the rangers about wildlife or any of those type of activities?
Absolutely. The park ranger staff are very active with providing, you know, all different sorts of interpretive opportunities. We'll have, you know, programs that are focused on the Savannah Conservation Corps and the history of the park, you know, taking people on tours of the CCC Museum, which for years was the actual park office, original CCC building, and has now been set aside as a museum. And that one is one that people can come and do on their own. As far as a self-guided tour, they just pick up the key in the office. But, you know, on occasion, rangers or even seasonals will provide, you know, tours of that museum and talk about the history of the park. Rangers, you know, they'll provide night hikes guided by lanterns. We have glowworm hikes that we do in the months of May, June, and July, which is a really interesting draw to the Hazard Cave Trail. They do guided canoe floats in the morning and the evening on our small 12-acre lake that was built by the CCC back in the original construction of the park. Off-trail hikes, you know, wildflower programs, animal programs, they run the gamut of things that they offer for people. So although it is a CCC Memorial Park, and some people might think of it being, you know, focused solely on history, this area has a, you know, a rich array of things that people can get involved in from the naturalist perspective. You know, fauna and flora, geology of the area. It's just it's a beautiful area, and rangers will lead a lot of educational opportunities to take those things in and see them.
Yeah, that's really exactly what I think of whenever you know, I think of a state park. I think sometimes people that don't really go to the state parks a lot think of park rangers just as, you know, protecting the park, making sure that, you know, nobody's doing anything they shouldn't do. But all of our state park rangers, every single one that I've met, has a wealth of knowledge about animals, plants, the history behind everything. It's just, it's truly, in my opinion, we've got the best state park system just because of the people we've got running things, you know, with our park managers and our rangers. I've been to a lot of the different state parks in a lot of different states. And actually, you know, going out west, every state park that I went to, like in Utah and Arizona and stuff, you had to pay to go in. And it blew my mind because I'm not used to that. You know, all of our parks, it's free to enter. So, you know, I can't thank you guys enough for all that you do, not only protecting our natural areas, but, you know, educating the communities on every aspect of it. So,
well, certainly appreciate that. And I think that the protection and the education go hand in hand. If you can educate people and, you know, at least help them to understand or appreciate it, it becomes much easier because they'll help you protect it. So if they have an appreciation for it, they're much more likely to take care of it. So, you know, that's what we try to do. You know, we get into this field because we're passionate about, you know, those things, whether you're at a historical site or an archaeological site or, a natural type area, state park or whatever it happens to be. Most people are drawn to those because they have a, you know, legitimate interest and care for, you know, helping to share those experiences and stories with the next generation. And that's what we're trying to do, you know, try to impact this generation so they bring their, you know, their children, you know, in years to come.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate all your time, Travis. Is there anything that else that we sort of missed that you wanted to highlight at your park?
Yeah, I think that one of the other unique things that Pickett has to offer amongst the, you know, seems like a treasure trove is, you know, the Dark Sky Initiative with the designation that the park received, you know, the first in the Southeast to be designated as a Dark Sky Certified Park. People can come and, you know, it's a dark area probably because of those, you know, public lands that we have around us, so there's not a lot of light pollution. So that's been one of the big sustainability efforts here, amongst all the other things with, you know, water bottle filling stations and, you know, motion sensing lights and things we can do to reduce our waste. But the dark sky is a big draw for people, and people may not know that, but if you like, you know, the night sky and then seeing the Milky Way and all those sorts of things, Pickett is a wonderful place where you can come and do that. And we offer ranger-led astronomy programs throughout the year as well.
Yeah, I totally forgot about them. Thank you so much for bringing that up. That's something that I've been wanting to do for so long, is come and do one of the ranger-led, like, lantern hikes, and then, you know, be able to see all the stars. There's something about that. It's hard to get, you know, hard to be able to see stars like that with, you know, more and more light pollution, you know, everywhere you go, really. So definitely if all of our listeners out there, if checking the stars out and, you know, you haven't been able to see the stars super clearly or the Milky Way and stuff like that, you're always in town, Pickett is definitely the place that you need to go to check all that out. So, well, Travis, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule. I know you've got such, a lot on your plate being the park manager there, but we are so appreciative of the work you and your staff do. And I can't wait to come out and meet you in person and hopefully go on that hike and camp. I want to make a whole weekend of it.
Well, we'll hold you to that. And, you know, I'm blessed to be the park manager, but, you know, it's the maintenance staff and the housekeeping staff and the clerks in the office and all the rangers that really, you know, grease the wheels that makes everything run here. I just, you know, sometimes get to speak to folks like yourself and kind of talk about the things that the park has to offer, but they're really the ones that deserve the credit for helping to keep Pickett as special as it is. So I want to give them a shout out for all their hard work and everything they do on a daily basis to make Pickett what it is.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, sir. Appreciate it.